B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pep Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk soft and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, here for the full 3 hours on this beautiful Saturday morning into the afternoon. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jim. You sound pretty excited about being here. It's a nice climate-controlled studio.
Yeah.
Looks like there's a monitor blocking the natural light coming in over here, so it seems like it's pretty good for you. You seem happy.
We're in our normal cave. No, it's finally like a sunny Saturday. I'm excited for the weekend. I'm thrilled that we finally will get Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final within, you know, days that I can actually feel within reach, I think, at this point, rather than the fact that it feels like the Bruins haven't played a game in, 2 months. I didn't think this was going to end up being a problem. Like, I didn't want to do too much bitching over the last week or so of, like, well, you know, there's the rest, and is the rest going to catch up with it? Like, it's actually... It's now gotten like interminable. Like, let's go here. Like, we need to get a game. And even I thought of it last night. It's like, you know, it's stupid. They're not playing tonight. They should be playing tonight. Let's go. And it's not even the rest I'm worried about. It's selfishly. I need, like, let's go. Hurry up. Let's go. Like, let's get this thing going. We need some hockey here.
Yeah, some fresh content.
Yeah, fresh content too. But we'll get to the Bruins and the Blues coming up on Monday later in the show. We will have the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up at noon, where we will discuss the date night between LeBron James and Kyrie Irving out in L.A. at a hot spot last week, and whether or not that means that that's another hint that Kyrie could be rejoining LeBron James with the L.A. Lakers. But I do want to start with the bleh that's taking social media by storm this morning. Courtesy of Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. Could someone send this to me, by the way? Because I haven't received this yet. Right, enough. Stop sending it to me. I've got it on Instagram and my DMs, time and time again from a bunch of strangers, and time again on Twitter. I've seen it. I'm holding it in my hand in my phone. I've seen it. I follow Tom Brady on Instagram enough. Anyway, if you haven't seen this yet, Tom Brady on Instagram this morning posts 4 photos, which I have to believe is from his expansive backyard in Brookline, in which he says it's a family affair. So the first photo is him looking kind of diesel. You know, like, compared to how he looked last year, where I thought by the end of the year, Chris, he was gaunt. It felt like he could have used a few pounds of muscle. He does look bigger. I remember feeling this way, too, when he did this bit with Jimmy Kimmel in recent weeks, where he throws the football through whose home was it?
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon's home. So Brady looking good. Julian Edelman looking jacked. And it's one of their kids and a couple of dogs. Okay, cute. And then you scroll, and it's Brady throwing motion. All right, good, looking good. The third photo.
Wearing the Six t-shirt.
Yeah, the Six t-shirt for the 6-time Super Bowl champion, which I'm sure you can buy at TB12 along with the expensive nuts and PJs. But it's the third photo that has everybody, you see, it doesn't matter that he's not at OTAs. And I'm typically not like, oh, Brady's got to be at the OTAs. Like, I didn't think it was going to matter last year. Obviously, it didn't. Sitting in with Felger and Maz, this obviously rubs Mike the wrong way. This year, considering that they won the Super Bowl last year, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But considering that they used their first pick in the draft on a wide receiver in N'Keal Harry, and that there's many, many new faces at wide receiver, and obviously a lot of upheaval at tight end, I would have thought this year, hey, maybe show up. But this third photo, look who's in the backyard of Tom Brady. Number one pick, N'Keal Harry. That's a jack young man right there.
Yes, it is.
So he's working with the Rook. All right. For those of us that want him at OTAs to work with young N'Keal Harry and some of the other new faces. Well, he is doing that. Well, at least with this kid. And this was the thing. Like, again, you're going to use your first draft pick on a wide receiver. The first time.
In the Belichick era.
In the Belichick era. That's important that he starts working with this kid early. Apparently, there had only been some social media back and forth.
That's what N'Keal Harry said. And that's that's what I wanted to sort of say just quickly. I don't think this is a coincidence that after N'Keal Harry is asked by the media, you know, sort of what's your relationship with Tom Brady? Have you worked with him at the first OTA that's open to the media, that all of a sudden the kid gets invited to the Brady compound to work out with Jules and
Tommy? Do you think that Tom's hand was essentially forced because he was got microphones and cameras stuck in his face at these OTAs this week when the media finally gets to show up. And Tom says, oh, well, you know, I probably should do this. I'll, you know, slide into his DMs and say, here's my address. Here's the code to get in through the gate. Come on, I need to start throwing you some footballs.
Don't look this pit bull directly in the eye. Yeah, yeah, those are all the things that you get. I'm not saying it was strictly media driven. I think from a football standpoint, he knows he has to work with his kid. But it's also sort of like a bad look, and it probably was a little bit of a reminder, like, oh man, you know what? Look, there are years where Tom hasn't gotten the help that he's needed at that wide receiver position. 2013, I think last year before they had Josh Gordon, I think you can make a case this year that it's not great. But here the Patriots are trying to appease him, trying to help him by using a first-round pick on a wide receiver. And it's like, okay, well, we need you to help this kid get up to speed and assimilate and make sure he knows the offense and that he can, you know, work with you. And as anybody over there will tell you who's been around for a while, forget the playbook. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter if you're N'Keal Harry and you memorize that playbook. If you don't get out on the field and you're not where Tom Brady thinks you should be and you don't see it the way he sees it, you're useless. You're obsolete. Forget about it. You will never get the football.
Well, that's essentially what happened to Chris Hogan last year. For whatever reason, there was some sort of discourse, I think from a football sense, between those two, and he was iced out. And you've seen that before with some of these guys that don't latch on. So, okay, good for N'Keal Harry. They're starting to work together. Can we now see some photos of some of these other guys getting the invite? Maybe Demaryius Thomas, Dontrell Inman. A lot of new faces there. So, on the one hand, good. I get it. Like, please, I've seen it. Stop sending it. Blah, see, Martin, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Blah, blah. We get it. He's working with the kid. Great. That's great. Now let's work in some of the other wide receivers, too, because there's a lot of new players on that team at that position.
Well, the other thing I'd say, too, and I do think it's great that he's invited him here, and I think it's great that Tom's taking the impetus to work with him. But at the same time, you know, let's be honest about it. Is it better than nothing, than the two of them not working together? Absolutely. Good on Tom to bring the kid into the fold. But it's still not the same as N'Keal Harry having to beat a defensive back off the line of scrimmage and beat a jam and be in the spot Tom wants him to be. It's you know, and look, I know it's 7-on-7. There's not a physicality, really, at this point of OTAs, but it's still not the same. It's still not as good as being out there with other guys and with more resistance. It's throwing against air.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you need him in like 11-on-11s and out there. But
yeah.
Look, either way, fine. It's good. I'm glad he's actually throwing footballs to the kid.
I am too.
That was something that did irk me. Again, is it going to matter? It obviously didn't last year, and we're probably making a mountain out of a molehill. But I just, you know, you're going to use your first-round pick on a wide receiver for the first time of the Belichick era, and you're not there. Didn't like it. But you know who was there? It was Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, and we were talking about this article on Felgren-Mez before you came in on your spot yesterday, and I was a bit surprised because, look, as long as they have Brady and Belichick, they're obviously going to, you know, fall out of bed and win 11 games.
Oh, yeah. Just about the degree of difficulty that Bill creates for himself.
But it feels like there has been a lot of upheaval, and there's positions that I am concerned about with this team going into this year, specifically wide receiver, tight end, obviously, without Rob Gronkowski. The left tackle position, I don't feel great about that. But Bedard, he's bullish on this team. Early. If you haven't read this, bostonsportsjournal.com. His column is just a first glance, but Patriots a very impressive lot and other OTA thoughts. Greg writes, you guys know me well. You know I don't go overboard about much, especially off-season practices in football underwear. With that out of the way, I came away from Thursday's off-season practice with one overriding thought. Despite the fact that core players like Brady, Kyle Van Noy, Michael Bennett, Sony Michel, Patrick Chung, Isaiah Wynn, and Dietrich Wise were not on the field, holy mackerel, do these Patriots have a ton of talent. Really? And if things come together in certain respects, it might not take me long to repeat what I said when I first saw the 2014 Patriots. This team is going to the Super Bowl, if not winning it. Now, before I get into his thoughts on certain positions,
yeah,
do you think they're real deep at certain positions? I do at two immediately. Running back and linebacker. I'll give them that, because especially with bringing back Jamie Collins,
okay.
I do think depth-wise, they're deep at those two particular positions.
Yeah.
But like to compare them to 2014, which had household names, yeah, I don't know. That feels bold from Greg.
It does. It does feel a little bold. I would also say they're very deep at cornerback. I mean,
sure.
That might be where they're the deepest. And he could be looking at it from that side. But I have some questions, I think, about the pass rush still, defensive line, Dietrich Wise in a different role. I know they got Michael Bennett, but Derek Rivers, do they have enough pass rush now that Trey Flowers isn't there? I think that's a question. I thought their pass rush was last year, to be honest, outside of Flowers. So that's a question for me. And then I have questions about the offensive line. You know, I did not think Marcus Cannon had a great year. And there's a big question mark right now at left tackle. So, you know, it's funny. I remember last year, I'm pretty sure it was last year, I think Greg wrote a story saying that last year's team was more talented than the 2017 team. And so I didn't quite agree with that. Obviously, they won the Super Bowl last year, and they didn't win it the year before. But I would argue that Patriots team that won the Super Bowl, I mean, they struggled a little bit, and I would say that was probably their least talented Super Bowl winner since the first one.
I'll say it till I go to my grave, Chris. I still don't understand how that team won the Super Bowl last year. They were obviously a completely different team, and they figured it out in the postseason. I'll keep saying till I'm blue in the face as well that they reminded me very much of the 2012 Ravens team that won the Super Bowl. They were meh during the regular season. They get in, they flip the switch, and dominate defensively, and they end up winning the damn thing. But I'm with you. Like, from a talent standpoint, that was 09-esque last year.
Again, yeah, I mean, I
still can't believe it.
So I feel like last year he was saying that. Now, yeah. Look, do I think this year's team is more talented or has the potential to be more talented than last year's? Yes, I do. I do. I do feel that way. So, I mean, we'll see. You know, it's a little premature. I think there are some big question marks, like particularly a wide receiver and offensive line. I think we sort of forget a little bit the way the passing game was for most of the year and what a huge difference it made when Gronkowski was able to get 2 weeks off for two of the three playoff games to have that extra week. Well, now you don't have him at all. And so tight end, wide receiver, offensive line, those are all things that are going to have a lot to do with how Tom Brady looks and how the passing attack looks. And that passing attack last year didn't look like the Patriots passing attack.
No, it didn't. But
not until the postseason, at least.
Greg really does feel bullish about this team thus far from the OTAs this week. I want to continue to make our way through this article that he posted on BostonSportsJournal.com yesterday, because there's certain positions he feels like they are stacked at. Again, just without even going, you know, Patriots.com, going through the depth chart. I think you're right about cornerback. I said linebacker, running back as well, but still thin at wide receiver. I'm worried, like, you know, more names there, not washed up guys. Dontrell in
Minnesota,
but Demaryius Thomas, like, ugh, no thanks. I mean, he's a warm body. At least he's a name, but I'd like something a little bit better.
See what my guy Maurice Harris does.
And left tackle for me right now continues to be a real issue, especially with the retirement out of the blue of this Jared Veld here, who they signed like a couple of weeks ago. It's like, okay, at least you have a veteran presence there, but can you really trust Isaiah Wynn when he's not even there? And who were they working out there during these OTAs?
Joe Tooney.
Yeah, Joe Tooney, who's been a guard like this. Huh?
He played it at NC State in college. I mean, it's a little, remember they used Mankins there a couple of times when they got in a pinch. So maybe but it's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I feel a bit concerned about that, but I want to go through this. Greg, very, very pumped about
this. We should play Sunshine Day while we read this.
I know, right? This is almost like Patriots.com type stuff from Greg Bedard. We'll go through this, how he feels so far about this team. And again, you want to just call in and go, see? Brady's working out with N'Keal Harry. Again, we've seen it. It's the social media post, the Instagram post that's taken the New England by storm this morning.
I'm going to stump for Dontrell Inman. Tom, Dontrell Inman deserves an invite to the Brady compound.
Slide into those DMs, Tom. All right, back after this. We're off and running. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I've seen myself improve on route running already within the first 3 days, so I'm just going to keep listening to him and, you know, just keep that same approach and keep that same mindset coming into practice every day.
That's Patriots rookie wide receiver and now FOT, friend of Tom, N'Keal Harry, speaking earlier this week at the OTAs. Finally, media had the availability, so sticking microphones and cameras in the face of that young man. But he came off very well. Might want to dial back that confidence. I'm not sure if Bill Belichick wants to hear that kind of thing. Oh, yeah, no, I've already noticed from the first 3 days, like, my route running's gotten better. Oh, has it? You're going to be humbled, Rook.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Please.
When Brandon Merriweather was a rookie, remember they drafted him in the first round, and they drafted him really to play corner. He ended up being a safety. And so he was asked after one of the media sessions, we were asking him about covering Wes Welker. And he said, Wes Welker's one of the best slot receivers in the league. You know, it's such an honor to cover him. And so the next day, Bill got wind of this. And in the film review thing, or in a team meeting in front of the whole team, basically they said, Brandon, you haven't played a game in this league. What the bleep do you know about who or who is not the best slot receiver? Like the most innocuous comment, like basically being like, it's an honor to cover this guy. I'm learning so much, whatever. And they just ripped him to shreds in front of the whole team.
Yeah. So while I liked hearing how confident that N'Keal Harry sounded this week, I'm sure that probably irks Bill in some way, shape, or form. And I think that's a good thing. You know, you need to humble these kids so that, you know, they shape up.
You're all about humbling the millennials. We all know that.
Get into the Patriot way there. But, hey, he's working out. out with Tom Brady again. That's what we're open up talking about here, is that N'Keal Harry finally got the invite from Tom to go to Brookline and work out in the backyard. It's just, you know, I don't know why it took a month. It was literally a month ago tonight that the NFL draft took place in Nashville, and the Patriots used that first pick of theirs on wide receiver N'Keal Harry. Took a month, but hey, finally he's working out with him. That's great. And also talking about Greg Bedard's column in Boston Sports Journal. He's pumped about this year's team, thinks that they're very deep. I want to continue to read on here from Greg, who says he hasn't gone full Bobo or anything. And no, I wasn't put into a trance watching the likes of Brian Hoyer, Danny Etling, and Jarrett Stidham. Actually, I was somewhat horrified and came away thinking Josh McDaniels is really going to earn his large paycheck this season. It's just everywhere I looked, there were waves and waves of talent, similar to that 2014 roster. Again, this is Greg Bedard writing this, and he doesn't go full bubble.
No, this is Greg doesn't do this.
To compare it to 2014, man. Anyway, he goes on to write here, look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Tight end, left tackle, and right end are areas of concern, and receiver will be a work in progress, but those areas can be mitigated in time. Other spots, I don't know how they're going to keep everybody. Take off the ball linebacker, for example. Landon Roberts was the starter, but you have Juwan Bentley coming back from injury, and Dante Hightower and Jamie Collins roaming around. And Van Noy wasn't even out there, plus Christian Sam, coming back from injury. In recent years, it felt like the Patriots were scraping to find one decent linebacker. Now they're all over the place, and don't worry about the multiple pass rush going away. It was omnipresent. Now, look, obviously with Phil Grimes, we had been very hard, myself included, on Kyle Van Noy, but the way he played in the postseason, he was their best player defensively,
yeah, he was phenomenal in the Super Bowl. Oh, he played wall to wall, man. He was tremendous, and he's going to get paid after this year if he has another strong year.
Yeah, and I think he's got his antenna up, and that's one of the things I'd like to think that motivates him. And he's got a hair across his ass, and rightfully so. He was ridiculous last year in the postseason. So
no doubt.
I do. That's one area I do think that they will be. Depth wise, they're okay there. So
but
I agree
come
with
on, I mean, we're talking about a Landon Roberts. Like, I love Greg; he knows more about football than I do. But have you ever been like, man, I really hope they can keep a Landon Roberts on the roster?
No, not really. I mean, I just think he's a depth guy.
I mean, I get the shakes when that guy gets put out on the field.
I love Dante Hightower. I thought he had a down regular season, but again, much like Van Noy, he raised his game in the postseason. What do you make of the return of Jamie Collins? We didn't. Really
I love
on
it.
This.
So
you do.
So I love that, and I could see where that would cloud this a little bit. I think that. Speaking of guys being humbled, I mean, he got his money. He went to Cleveland, didn't win anything. I think he comes back here humbled. He was tremendous in this system when he was willing to follow the rules and play his position. The last year he was here, he was trying to get paid. He was frustrated. He started to freelance a little bit and he was doing a little bit of gap guessing, and that was annoying to Belichick and the Patriots. I think it's great because you bring him back here and he has something to prove. And I think it's also sort of good insurance if, you know, what if something goes awry with Van Noy? Like, Van Noy's frustrated, he's not getting paid, or he's not getting a deal, or he's sort of protecting himself to reach free agency. Well, here's somebody to push him. And what if Hightower gets hurt again? Okay, now you'd have Collins and Van Noy. That's really strong at linebacker, and Bentley as well. I love that signing. I think that's a great signing by the Patriots to bring back Collins.
And do you think that with Gerard Mayo now being the linebackers coach, that he's going to have a better effect on Collins being back as well? Because they seem, from what I've read, those two had a pretty good rapport.
Yeah, Mayo, really well-respected guy. I think, you know, when he was here as a team captain, I think a lot of those linebackers, you know, obviously play with those guys. They look up to him. And I think he's a good conduit, a good bridge between sort of Belichick and these guys. Because if these guys feel like they're getting sort of BS from Belichick, or they're getting the sort of, you know, contract year Patriot dance, Mayo's a guy who can sort of, you know, pull him aside and be like, look, I know how you feel. Like, I've been through it. Like, they know that he knows, you know, some of the political stuff that goes on down there, and that he's also, while he's a coach, he's also his own man. He's, you know, not going to be completely beholden to Bill like some of these other guys that are coming, you know, from whatever school of mines that they came from.
Well, deep at linebacker, that I agree with Greg in this column here at BostonSportsJournal.com. He gets to the secondary, which you also think is pretty deep.
Yes, I do.
He says, in the secondary, your head starts spinning when you look at different combinations between Stephon Gilmore, Jason McCourty, J.C. Jackson, Jonathan Jones, Juwan Williams, Keon Crossan, and Ken Webster. And that's just the cornerbacks. Okay, yeah. Look, Gilmore had a ridiculous season. I think McCourty's fine. J.C. Jackson, a lot of upside. Same for Jones. Juwan Williams, who knows, rookie. Keon Cross and Ken Webster. Like, okay, you said it before, but do you really think that's maybe one of the, that's the
biggest area of strength? I do. I mean, Duke Dawson, like, I do think it's pretty deep. They have good depth there, and I think that will, in a passing league, to be able to put five, six, seven DBs on the field who are all pretty high quality, I think that will help them. Now, let's see. I don't know what Duke Dawson is. He didn't play last year.
Yeah.
I'm not going to judge Juwan Williams off of OTA practices. He's a bigger corner. I think that can be tough at times in this league, particularly with what's happening now with pass interference being reviewable. You know, if he ends up being a little handsy, that could be challenging. And we've seen in the past with young corners, look, I like J.C. Jackson, but the progress isn't always linear. Who's to say he doesn't take a step back this year? So we're sort of assuming that it's just going to be an upward trend with him. They're deep at that position, and I think they can find the right combinations. But, I mean, it's not – we're not throwing, like, Mike Haynes, Ty Law, and Darrell Revis out there with Gilmore. Like, it's good. I think it's a really deep position. But, you know, let's not get carried away.
He goes on here writing about safety. You don't even miss – Pat Chung, who obviously broke his arm there in the Super Bowl, so he'll be back eventually. Obi Malafonwu, who they picked up from Oakland last year, directing traffic with Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon and Terrence Brooks. That's that free agent.
Yeah, I like
they
Brooks
from the Jets.
I like him.
It's easy to see he's a Belichick favorite already, talking about Terrence Brooks on the second team. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, this is like pants off from Greg Bedard in this.
Yeah, he's lost me at Landon Roberts and Obi Malafonwu.
Yeah.
I can't get on board.
Just like depth guys. But you like Brooks?
I do like Brooks because I think he's a good fit for what they want to do. And he's one of these special teams guys where it's like if they actually have to plug him in to play snaps, he can do it. He's, you know, a solid, you know, starter level, like average starter level type of player, and they'll maximize his ability. It's not like putting somebody like Ebner in there or Brandon King, guys who really like special teams, that's their forte, and you're in trouble if you're asking them to play significant snaps defensively. And I've also felt for the last couple of years that they really could sort of use like a fourth safety. You know, Harmon's good, McCourty's McCourty, and Patrick Chung is great. You can use them all over the field. But when one of those guys gets hurt, you know, in the past it was like, oh, you know, here comes Jordan Richards, you know, and it's like they have needed this sort of depth here, this fourth safety for a while, and I think he can be that guy.
Yeah, and just overall in reading this, and it's kind of what I assumed anyway, like I think that what their game plan is going to be this year is how they ended up winning the Super Bowl and how they kind of ran their offense throughout the postseason. It's going to be focusing on the running game a little bit, utilizing the running backs,
yeah,
and it's going to be defense heavy. Like, and I'm fine with that and taking some of the pressure off Tom Brady. Again,
sure.
Look, at tight end, and Greg writes here, at tight end, the Patriots appear to be really speed deficient at the position. Austin Seferian Jenkins still has to get on the field. By the way, let's not forget, this is a guy, even if you're like, oh, well, he was a name once. He lost his job, essentially, to James O'Shaughnessy with the Jaguars last year, who was also here at one point,
that's
by
right.
the way. So he kind of stinks. Greg writes, there's a long way to go, but I could see them start to de-emphasize the position if this keeps up. Ben Watson is solid all around and certainly functional, but he's well past his prime. And that's the other thing. Maybe Watson factors in a little bit in the red zone, but he dropped these last couple of years. You got to go back to 2016 when he was, I think, one of the team captains of the Saints that year. He had a really good season. I think it was close to like 700 yards, 8 touchdowns,
yeah,
but there's been a drop these last two.
Oh, so. I mean, no matter what it is, it's going to be a drop off from Gronk, right? And that was a big part of their offense. I think people have sort of forgotten. That's a big reason they won the Super Bowl. The idea that Gronk got healthy, or at least healthier, and he had 2 weeks to prepare for the first game and the last game, it made a big difference. I mean, just think about that Super Bowl, the touchdown. That was all Gronk. Like,
yeah,
that drive, it was,
oh,
it,
yeah.
Now you don't have that.
And at least, so this whole thing isn't glowing. And the one area more than anything else, and
okay,
I've been on this for a while, and it was one of the things I wish they did in this offseason, was use their franchise tag, which they're somewhat reluctant to do, and use that on Trent Brown. Like, you know, you have him back for an insurance year as you bring along Isaiah Wynn. And Greg writes here, look, there's still a lot of work when you talk about tight end and left tackle, Brady's successor as well. He might have to play until he's 50. And on the edge, we'll have to see if a really green defensive coaching unit can bring it all together, but there's largely no shortage of talent in this team. But left tackle more than anything else, especially because where was Isaiah Wynn? It's now been 9 months since he blew out his leg with that hamstring issue.
Yeah, there's some pictures that have been posted, I think, by the Patriots. I saw the beat writers that would indicate that maybe at some of the non-media sessions he's been there, at least for the stretching part.
Okay, so and they have the O-line whisperer in Dante Scarnecchia.
Oh,
so
Dante's
if anyone's going to figure it out, it's him, but I don't know how you still can't look at that position and try to protect the backside of a 42-year-old quarterback and not be a little bit worried. I just wish that they brought Trent Brown back on the franchise tag. You have one more year, and then you know you bring someone along like Wynn, and you figure it out as you go. At that position more than anything else. That's the major
Yonny Kajus, who I like, the kid they drafted from West Virginia. Injured. He's coming off a quad injury, and so if I'm Belichick, you know, I'd probably get through these OTAs, and then I'm looking around and saying, should I bring in somebody? Like, I would be happy if they brought in, say, Donald Penn.
He used to be with the Raiders.
Yeah. You know, he was solid his last couple of years at left tackle. In fact, I think he made the Pro Bowl. Last year, they switched him to right tackle. I would not read too much into any sort of personnel decisions made by John Gruden, and I would not say that that in any way defines a football player's ability to play or not play. So they moved him to right tackle. They moved on from him. He's a free agent. He did something, I think, on NFL Network, sort of breaking down how the Patriots were able to flummox the Rams' offensive line in the Super Bowl, and it was pretty smart the way he broke it down. So obviously this is a guy who has pretty good football sense. You know, he's a bigger guy. I think he could benefit from somebody like Dante to maybe give him a little kick in the butt, but you have to have a little insurance there. Like, that makes me really nervous to go into this, because Wynn was a borderline left tackle in a lot of scouts' minds to begin with. You know, his whole thing was he doesn't have typical length, but he's really quick and he can really move. Well, can he still move the same coming off an Achilles? Because if he can, he's not a left tackle.
Yeah. Well, I want to get to the Bruins as we still wait for this series to start with the St. Louis Blues, which finally begins Monday night. What will winning another Stanley Cup for the likes of Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara and other veterans on this team mean for their legacy? We'll get to that after the Sports Hub headlines here with Tim McCone. It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Obviously want to wish the Bruins well in their Stanley Cup final, and proud of what they're doing, and wish them the very best in this next series. I know they played great, but you know, this will be a great opportunity for them, and we'll be here cheering them on.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. That's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick at OTAs earlier this week, showing some love to the Boston Bruins, who begin the Stanley Cup final, finally, Monday night at TD Garden against the visiting St. Louis Blues. Also a reminder there, as we use Lil Nas X, Old Town Road as the bed, he's going to be playing this Monday as part of the viewing party and concert at Boston City Hall Plaza. To kick off the Stanley Cup final, the Boston Bruins and the NHL hosting a free outdoor concert viewing party at City Hall Plaza Monday night. Presented locally by Connection, the event is going to open at 4:30 in the afternoon. Musical performances at 6 p.m. Fans can stay to watch the Bruins-Blues game on video screens and enjoy food truck offerings, beer, and wine. You can learn more at bostonbruins.com/Stanley Cup Final Party. This was brought up on Velgrade Maz throughout the week, as we have scrambled to things to talk about with this series that just hurry up and start. What's it mean legacy, from like a legacy standpoint, Chris, do you think, for guys like the veterans on this team, that this is maybe their last kick of the can here to actually win the Stanley Cup? For guys like Bergeron, Rask, Krejci, well, maybe not so much Rask, but definitely Bergeron, Chara, Krejci, and I have an update on him not practicing today in just a moment. But if they do win this thing, I mean, does that solidify them? And really the Bruins, if you look at them from over the decade, as one of the better teams that's come through here during this championship run. And if they end up losing it, do they take a bit of a hit and it's just like, there should have been more. They went to three. They only won one. What do you think?
Well, I think they have a lot to gain by winning it from a legacy standpoint. And I look at specifically Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and Zdeno Chara. I think for those guys, guys that are Hall of Famers or potential Hall of Famers, look, those guys are always going to be respected and revered here in Boston, but I think they can change sort of the perception about them in the history of hockey outside of this market if they win a second cup. I think if you go back and look at that 2011 cup, and it was a tremendous run, but I think that the way that history has sort of remembered it for the most part is Tim Thomas got insanely hot and stood on his head, and the Bruins won the cup. And, I'm not saying it's a fluke or it was a fluke, but I think if you win a second one, no one can say it was a fluke. And nobody can say that, well, you guys just won because you had Tim Thomas playing out of this world. I think it burnishes the legacy of these guys in terms of where they stand in NHL history to have their name on the cup for a second time. And I think that's really big, because I think, again, you know, it's sort of like when you think about the Celtics, right? The new big three Celtics. You know, it was great that they won, but you feel like they should have won more. And if they had won a second one, I think it really would have sort of solidified them, to your point earlier, as one of the sort of, you know, great teams in Celtic history, great runs, you know, in NBA history. Instead, you only end up with the one. And I think for these guys, for the core of this Bruins team, it's a little bit of the same thing. This really sort of hammers it home, and it's like, okay, these are some of the best players of their generation, not just guys who are beloved in Boston for the way that they play.
Yeah, I think when, even just in terms of all the wealth of winning over the last close to 20 years here that we're going on, which is insane, it would feel like a bit of an underachievement, because I do look at that Celtics Big Three era as a bit of an underachievement. I don't know how you can't. You know, that 2010 finals where they blew it, you know, Perk gets hurt. Like, that's one. It's like, man, you left one on the table. 2013, ultimately, like, that sucked at the way that they lost it. But the Chicago Blackhawks were probably, you know, they're like a dynasty type team. I look at that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. There's no harm in losing it, though. I mean, that was their second cup in like 4 years.
This Blues team, they can't lose to. And I think they're legit. I think it's going to be, I say Bruins in seven. I think this is going to be a lot tougher of a series than people might expect. They mirror the Bruins in a lot of ways. Their defensemen, they're a giant. I think Binnington, Rask has been better than Binnington during the playoff run, but he's, you know, most of the reason that the Blues are in this place in the first place and part of their turnaround. But they're more of a cute story than anything else. They cannot lose to this team. They can't. It would be a massive underachievement. And I think that their legacy would take a bit of a hit if they do lose this.
Well, look, they're their best team remaining. And I felt this way for a little while, that this is an opportunity too good for the Bruins to pass up in terms of lifting the cup again. Just the way that the bracket broke for them, the way that the board fell, I felt like they've been the favorite here for a little while, pretty much since the first round when you saw Tampa and Washington and Pittsburgh all get bounced. I mean, this is a tremendous opportunity for them. And here's the other thing, too, on winning more than one. I think if you win just one, people can sort of look at it and say, again, I don't want to just boil it down to luck, because that's not fair either. But they can say, you know, you were fortunate, it was the right time, you had momentum, everything went right for you. You do it again, it's more about skill.
Definitely.
It's more about skill, it's more about excellence. It's like, okay, you did it more than once, that's not a coincidence, that's your excellence. And I think that's the difference sort of for these guys. If they can do it one more time and lift the cup one more time, and to the point that we're talking about, if they win two out of three Stanley Cup finals, and the other one is a loss to that Blackhawks team, then you look at it and you say, wow, these Bruins teams were really good. You look, that Blackhawks team with Taves and Kane, when they were in their prime.
Oh, they were stacked.
They were stacked. That was a loaded team. Corey Crawford played really well in the net, all that. And you say, that's understandable that they lost that game and they lost that series. And it makes that loss look even better if you win this Stanley Cup.
Mike in Wakefield, what do you make of this?
Gentlemen, what's going on?
Hi.
Murray, I'm with you on a lot of the points. I really am. But I feel like definitely if they lose, it's going to take a wicked hit to their legacy. But the thing is, I feel like the Bruins right now have the potential of the Blackhawks when they went on their dynasty run. I think we have just about the same level of talent. Obviously, it's hard to recognize that living in the moment when you're looking in the past. But I think the Bruins, what they really need to do is they need to capitalize on this series, obviously. I think it's going to go to seven games as well. But they need one more cup after this if they want to put themselves in that rarefied air, like the Blackhawks, like the Oilers back in the day, like the Montreal Canadiens. So that's pretty much where I stand at. I think it's going seven. I'm looking at a really good, well-fought series, man. I think the teams are really evenly matched up.
All right, thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate you checking in from your personal plane that you're flying over Wakefield. You know that, or you're in a very loud Subaru WRX.
No, I was wondering. I'm
those
like,
mufflers drive me crazy. Oh, like, fix the damn thing.
I was wondering too. I'm like, I was going to say, good luck mowing the rest of your lawn. I hope it's going well.
I'm going to wake up the neighborhood. Oh God. I hate when you modify your car like that. You're just obnoxious. And you're doing it to be obnoxious. Just admit it. So maybe he had a muffler problem. I don't know. I wasn't going to keep him on to ask because it was driving me nuts. This has been a problem personally for me, Chris, because there's some a-hole that lives on my street.
Oh,
and,
really?
And Sleepy Melrose that it decided, okay. Yeah, I'm going to mod my car, bro, so that I can announce that I'm coming around. Wake up. If it's Revere Beach, Hampton Beach, fine.
Yeah.
I get it. You want to stunt and show off and be like, oh, maybe I can get these girls with this obnoxious car. It doesn't work. It didn't work in the 90s when everyone had the neon lights under their, I'm thinking of the Mustangs. Either way, enough with the loud mufflers. Okay, speaking of legacies, taking a hit. One who's definitely did was Joe Thornton, and the Sharks getting knocked off by the Blues. I want to touch on this as we come back here in our long commercial-free segment that will segue into the Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You're listening to Jasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
It is satisfying to me. You know, it really is. I'd be lying if I didn't say it, that the Bruins won it before San Jose. You know, that was a controversial trade. We knew that it was going to cause a lot of waves, and, you know, eventually it probably cost you my job. But so it is, you know, and I don't think, you know, and you might differ with me, I don't think the Bruins would have won the Stanley Cup if they had Joe Thornton on this team.
That really is a shot. Man. So that's former Bruins general manager Michael Connell. And that sound from him joining Felger and Mazz in 2011. Talking about Jumbo Joe Thornton. Who he and the Sharks get eradicated by the St. Louis Blues in the Western Conference Finals. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Before we touch on this, though, I mentioned in the last segment when we were talking about, from a legacy standpoint, what this would mean for the Bruins. I mentioned David Krejci, not a practice today. So they sent him home on Thursday night when they did the scrimmage, because afterwards Bruce Cassidy said he was dealing with the flu, but he should be back today. Saturday when they were practicing, and he's not. So reading from Joe Haggerty, Krejci not a practice today after being sent home sick prior to Thursday's inter-squad scrimmage. Carson Coleman taking his place for this morning's practice. So something to keep an eye on and ear out for, because as of right now, that's not great. So, we'll keep you posted on that as we go along here. We still have days to go anyway, so I'm sure he'll be fine by Monday. But back to Joe Thornton. His legacy, you have to think, with his age, because next month I think he's 41, you have to think that this is it for this guy. And what do you make of this guy's career? Because I said, and it's a bit harsh, but it's to me, it's, I felt validated because our assistant program director, Rick Radzik, didn't know that I had said this, and I'd gone back and forth with Felger and Mazz in the email chain that morning. He said during a commercial break, he's like, you know who he reminds me of? Drew Bledsoe. And that's what I said. Number one pick, really tall and talented, never truly lived up to the potential, crazy amount of padded stats, had to get shipped out of Boston because it was never really going to work here, and we all knew it. He can't be in the big one. He's hockey Drew Bledsoe. He's Drew Bledsoe on skates. That's what Joe Thornton is. And he'll go into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Oh, definitely.
And he's had a great career. But you just always kind of knew deep down,
something missing there.
Yeah, there's an it factor. The thing that you get with Tom Brady and the greats. There's that killer instinct. He don't have it.
I think that's a great way of putting it, actually, Jim. You know, the killer instinct isn't there, and it hasn't been throughout the course of his career. I remember Kevin Paul DuPont sort of criticizing him years ago in the playoffs when he was the captain, you know, for sort of his leadership and maybe not showing that killer instinct. And I always thought San Jose was sort of the perfect place for him. It's like they care, but they don't care with the intensity of a market like Boston.
Losses aren't taking years.
Yeah, it's not an original six market. And if you look at it, I have to say, you know, John Tortorella, I think, said it best when he talked about this guy, when he basically was saying he's one of the great losers in the history of our game. And that's not a personal commentary on Joe Thornton. I think he's had a wonderful career, but he's never been able to translate his individual talent into team success. And when you take a guy number one overall, like he was taken in 1997, that guy is supposed to be a generational talent, a foundational piece that changes your organization. You win a bunch of championships, and that's not what happened. And if I think about the Joe Thornton Sharks, what I think about is the same thing that happened with them losing that series to the Blues. And look, I know Carlson was hurt, and they lost Pavelski and all that stuff at the end. But his teams normally have been the more talented teams, and he has lost to lesser talented teams throughout the course of his career. He does not elevate the play of the guys around him. Speaking of a guy like a Tom Brady.
They're also very much, they remind me of, they're like the mid-2000s Colts on skates. But at least even they, some, you know, ended up winning a championship in 06, but there's a lot of similarities there, like talent all over the ice, you know, household names, and they just can't get over the hump. Selfishly, are you a little upset that it's not the Sharks and the Bruins?
I am, because I definitely wanted it to be, you know, yeah. Jumbo Joe sort of seeking the capstone of his career against the Bruins. I thought it would have been a great story. It would have been really interesting. I also think stylistically it would have been interesting just because of all the talent that the Sharks have. And the fact that they want to play sort of a more wide-open game versus the Bruins, I thought that would have been interesting. As Bruce Cassidy has said about the Blues, and you said they're sort of our twin. So I feel like these games could be like a real grind.
Yeah, I think...
Which, for the neutral hockey fan like myself, is not always as entertaining.
Yeah, and I think and this is one of the reasons I think this is going to be a more competitive series. I think you're going to be looking at more 2-1, 3-2 type of games. That's where, you know, puck luck comes in, and yes. These could go either way. I will say, even though I was clamoring for this Blues-Bruins series selfishly because I wanted to see my friends in St. Louis and have the barbecue, and I didn't want to be on a flight for 6 hours.
You didn't want to do that long flight.
Boy, this bite me in the ass. And I find out last week my friends were out of town for a wedding, so I'm not going to see them.
Ooh.
So womp womp there. And then the other thing is, boy, trying to find a flight. For any of you that are, you know, if any fans that are trying to book flights in and out of there, you've already pretty much figured out, oh, there's only like two planes that go back and forth without any stops, and those were already sold out. So I have to make stops in Detroit and Pittsburgh. And there's some flights. There was one flight, Chris, I saw trying to come back that literally took 14 hours. It's like, oh, this is spitefully paying me back. Here I am wishing to go to St. Louis, and some of these flights are just, it takes you days to try to get back from that hellhole area to Boston. So, yeah, that's what I get for wishing for this. Either way, hurry up and start this series. Monday night, game one. At the Garden. Time for the Sports Hub Celtics show. Still more to discuss here as Kyrie Irving seems to continue to flirt with LeBron James. Imagine that. Didn't seem possible even 5-6 months ago, but here they are on a date night in L.A. last week. We'll get to this and more coming up here in our long commercial. This is our long commercial-free segment. Here we have the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone, and it's right to the Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.